long time no chat. Today, we're going to hear from the founder and CEO of Axelbox and Makeshift Tech, Caleb Holt. Caleb is an innovator, an entrepreneur, a father, and an amazing all-around human being. Caleb is going to give us some insights into what is technology optimization and how do we actually go about commercializing technology and getting past these valleys of death with it for that innovators constantly face, and going to give us some success stories and talk about why failure is not a bad thing. It's something we should embrace. You're going to hear about the upcoming event that Makeshift Tech is hosting, a pitch coming up November 17th. And if you are an entrepreneur, an innovator, make sure to check out makeshifttech.org in the link in bio. Keep innovating. Let's go, smart firefighting world. Caleb Holt, welcome back to the Smart Firefighting Podcast. How you doing?
I am doing good. It is so good in 2020 to be back on the Smart Firefighting Podcast.
It's a pleasure to have you. And for those of us that maybe have been living under a rock and don't know who is Caleb Holt and some of the work that you do, God forbid someone that people don't know, but some don't, give us a little context into the snapshot to the day in the life of Caleb.
So thank you for that opportunity. Again, Caleb Holt, I'm located here in College Station, Texas, and I'm a father of three kids, married to Leslie Holt. We're going on 13 years. I have a 3, 5, and 8-year-old kid, so that's really how my day starts and ends with those guys. For 11 and a half years, I was at Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service. Love that place. World's largest emergency response training organization. And for 8.5 years, I managed their product development center. I had an amazing team there. Many of those members are still at Teeks. Some have made a couple of adjustments, like my good friend Paul Siebert. He's now over a municipal training program at Teeks. But Ryan Mills and Dr. Motes that are still at Teeks, they now have the Teeks Innovation and Testing Center. So love those guys and still try to work with them as much as we can. And just had a conversation about deepening our relationship with them. So after 10 years of public service, I decided it was time to go back out into my entrepreneurial roots. And so I started two companies in September of 2019. One is called Axelbox Innovations, which is a technology development firm focused on products that enhance first responders, public safety, and our armed forces. And just got lucky. And we were trying to start a nonprofit, and we actually were asked if we would take over a nonprofit. And so we have transitioned an organization here in our community that previously and originally was known as the Research Valley Innovation Center into Makeshift Tech. And so it's a 501c3 that has a super simple mission: bring first responders and armed forces together with people who make safe tech.
It almost sounds as simple as your old or your current catchphrase of burn it, break it, blow it up. And I like how simple it is. And while it seems so simple in the phrase of connecting the dots and bringing people together, within Makeshift Tech, how do you actually make safe tech?
Well, it's really hard. I think that, one, all of us, globally have been dealing with COVID-19. I jokingly tell people that, if we only set out to run this nonprofit, we would have made it 2 weeks. And the reason for that is we held our open house on February the 27th. And on March 13th, the state of Texas shut down going into buildings. And so the nonprofit side has really had to redefine itself. A lot of our mission statement of bringing those end users together was creating physical spaces and physical locations. I mean, we planned on making this huge announcement at FDIC at their innovation hub. And those things were not possible as COVID began to literally just start shutting down conference after conference. And even today, we're still seeing conferences that we felt pretty confident would happen in the early part winter months of 2021. We're still starting to see those cancel. And so we really had to redefine what our nonprofit, how it was going to serve our customers. But the core of your question, Kevin, is, how do we make safe tech? our mission is around enhancing those technologies that are responsible for line of duty deaths. And so we've always monitored those, and we're always curious about what are the causes of the line of duty death. And the great part about this is, you know, we look at cardiac arrest for law enforcement officers, I mean, for firefighters. We look at traffic accidents for law enforcement officers. We look at terrorism and counterterrorism, and now COVID, as we look at our military personnel. But, you know, right out of the gate, we had an opportunity when we were out in Philadelphia. You and I were out there together at the National Fallen Firefighters Fire Innovation Symposium. And now we even talk about suicide being recognized as a line of duty death. And so we've always known what kind of technology we were looking for. I think the most important work that we do now is try to help people understand the applications for that technology. So there's a significant focus on suicide prevention and just the medical industry in general. But what we're trying to do is identify those technologies and introduce them to the problems that first responders have, and try to do what I call technology optimization. And, you know, it's very common for a tech to start off in one market, and they can get very comfortable there, but we try to move them across into the public safety domain and into the military domain, which previously, I think, there was some assumptions of how difficult it would be to do, you know, to work with those organizations, municipal governments, federal governments. And I think COVID has actually probably helped us make that just a little bit easier to do business with certain government entities. And we have a lot of great members in the ecosystem across the country that are helping make that happen.
Well stated and well put, Caleb. And I think we can all agree that those line of duty deaths are really frustrating and upsetting, just because pretty much all of them in some way or another are preventable. And you look at some of these stats of from the fire side, the first responder side, the alarming rates, increasing rates of suicide, heart attack, cancer. And you, in some of these things, especially from like the suicide aspect, where it's not really a physical, you can't really see it, but there are these compounding issues that happen time after time. And I think it's tough for maybe others who don't experience aspects of trauma to realize, you know, suicide amongst firefighters, like, you know, maybe it appears to maybe be perceived to be more common amongst warfighters who are returning back from war. But I think that it's interesting to hear about you talking about applying technology towards mental health. And just to take a quick deep dive on that for a second, I mean, what technology is out there that's not just a cool widget, but something that you see as something that is truly enhancing and empowering the mental health and wellness?
Yes, I mean, I'll name Neuroflow, but I want to tell you about Neuroflow is a company that we met when we were in Philadelphia, and they're working up there with Fire Commissioner Till and Jefferson Health. But a company that I've worked with here locally in the state of Texas is a company called BrainCheck. And BrainCheck was an extremely fascinating technology who, interestingly enough, was originally focused on firefighters. And so they can use rhythmic eye movement and hand-eye coordination of maybe touching dots on an iPad. I've always seen the technology demoed to me using an iPad. And they could essentially determine after a head injury whether or not you had a concussion. And also think about this in terms of football players or youth football players. You know, if they have a head-on collision or they're involved in a targeting call, you're able to kind of run them through a series of hand-eye coordination games on an actual iPad. Well, what BrainCheck found out was that was an extremely fragmented market, and it was very difficult to actually monetize it and get it into the hands of first responders and also football players or coaches that would adopt the technology. So they ended up getting into the Texas Medical Center Accelerator down in Houston, Texas. And now this company has an FDA-approved early onset dementia detection technology. So some of the exact same brain functions that you look for during a concussion are also indicators of early onset dementia. And so now you can make a bit more preventative I'm trying to use medical speak, but you can make some preventative measures earlier on in one's life if you have an indication that they're actually going to have dementia later on in their life. Think about if you could also communicate this to loved ones, right? You begin to see that someone maybe is having dementia or is beginning to have dementia. Wouldn't that be the time that you would want to know that you could sit down with your loved one and have a conversation and really take advantage of the time that you have with them before dementia really takes over their life? And so BrainCheck is a great company that is really helping out with that. And Neuroflow uses some similar capabilities, but also what it does is it removes some of the bravado that lies in all of the industries that we serve, from firefighters, law enforcement, military personnel. The last thing you want to do is have to tell someone you're dealing with depression or that you're having suicidal thoughts. And so Neuroflow allows you to actually have a third party in the form of a text message conversation with their system. And now if they do get an early detection that maybe this individual is suicidal, they can escalate that. But sometimes it's just a natural progression of brain to go through these thought processes during a bout with depression. And so these technologies are enabling us to have a better conversation, because if you had to go on to a survey and you had to say, well, are you having suicidal thoughts, yes or no? Well, you wouldn't necessarily engage that survey, because you're going to make the assumption, well, my commander's going to read this, so I definitely don't want to get kicked off the job or anything like that. But Neuroflow, they do it through a text message conversation. So you're actually having a conversation. You can text your actual thoughts and feelings through that conversation, and you feel like you're having a more personal dialogue as opposed to filling out a survey. So those are just two of the technologies that we're following. We've also been communicated, and one of our members of our National Advisory Council is Kirk McKenzie, and he's introduced me to some PhD candidates across the country who have dedicated their PhD theses around technology and the use of technology for suicide prevention.
That's amazing. And I love the way you put it, of leveraging some of these technologies to have better conversations. And it seems like from these issues of suicide, heart attack, cancer, it's all about pre-screening and having some level of pre-information. If we can detect it or get information sooner, we have a much better chance of dealing with it, as opposed to just sort of kicking it under the rug and assuming everything is okay.
Well, I mean, and the other thing is, I've heard it equated to, so for instance, we like disasters, right? Like my tagline is burn it, break it, blow it up. These incidents, so like when we refer to two different kinds of storms. So hurricanes, like for instance, I was receiving notifications that the 26th or 27th hurricane has just been named out in the Atlantic Ocean. The advantages that we have to a hurricane is we traditionally have 48 to 72 hours before landfall. But I've heard, suicide and those particular elements related more to tornadoes, where you can predict, okay, the weather indicates one could occur, but you don't know where it's going to happen. You don't know where it's going to come down. And so I think that you have to, these technology have to give us more awareness so that we can have more understanding with more lead time to take advantage. And these are things that we're really interested in studying and finding more technology to help out in this particular area going forward.
Well put. And I really like that analogy of the hurricane versus tornado in terms of the awareness beforehand. And gosh, we could spend the next hour just talking about the mental health aspect, and it's important. And kudos to some of your focus on it. But within that, you got me thinking about obviously a lot of the other work that you do, but talking about this application of technology and some of these challenges that an entrepreneur faces. And to give an example or to get some context from you, you may hear someone who has a great idea and they'll put some stuff on the whiteboard and talk about how it's the best thing since sliced bread. But if entrepreneurs don't really spend the time to get to know the end user and figure out what their true problems are and what the funding mechanisms are, it's really just going to end up not going anywhere or creating more problems. So how do you approach working with entrepreneurs to overcome some of these hurdles and challenges to truly commercializing technology?
You make it too easy to have this conversation, Kevin. So, one of the things that I really, I will go so far as to say I use it as a crutch, is I push membership into SafeTech. And the reason that I do that is SafeTech, one of the things that you receive as a member of SafeTech is I will personally make 5 in-user interviews. I will set those up for you. I will actually give you the opportunity to talk to some of the most innovative chiefs in this country, fire law. I can actually set up some meetings with you with military personnel, National Guardsmen, whatever it is that's necessary. I can tell you quite honestly, these people are very, very eager to find new and innovative technologies. I don't want that to be construed as you can walk into any firehouse and have that conversation, because those people, just think about it this way. The fire station is a place of work, and those individuals, they want to have community engagement. You bring them cookies, I guarantee you they're going to take them. But they are there with the intent of bettering their mind and their bodies and getting ready to service their citizenship when they go out. There is a place, there is a time that those individuals can be engaged. And so we work with their schedule to make sure that they have an opportunity to get that end user engagement. One of the things that I said a whole lot when I was at TEKS, when you're at the world's largest emergency response training organization that trained, pre-COVID 190,000 people a year, a lot of people will make the assumption that you are a first responder. And I used to really be adamant about making sure people understand, I don't actually kick doors in. I've never arrested anybody. And so for that reason, you got to go ask the end users. And I say this often, especially to my team, that there is no level of success I have ever had or created or shared came without having end users engaged in the technology development process. Now, there is also a saying in public safety that if you've talked to one department, you've talked to one department. And I say that specifically because let's assume you call a department and you have to be ready, because first responders will tell you point blank, no bushes, exactly what they think about your technology. So if they think it's terrible, they're going to tell you that sounds like a terrible idea. Just keep in mind, it might be a terrible idea for his department or her department. There's a lot of tradition built up inside of these industries. And so just know that there's a lot of people we can have a conversation with about your technology. But I feel confident that in order to have success, you have to have an end user champion, someone who is willing to come to the forefront and say, all right, I've actually investigated this based off of the number of calls that we have. This technology could reduce that number. It could reduce the way that we respond to those calls. And so that end user engagement probably is the most overlooked thing if people look to people like Steve Jobs, who used to be famous for saying, we do no market research because our customers don't know what they want. Well, to a degree, that might be true. First responders, law enforcement, and personnel might not know what the newest and greatest technology is out there, but you still have to respect their training and the process that they go through in responding to calls every day, and educate them about how your technology would enhance that. So this is something that we spend a lot of time on. We have 4 or 5 members here at SafeTech that are willing to have these conversations and go into great depth with any company to make sure that they get good end user engagement with their development of technology.
Completely agree that it's essential to be able to have those conversations, because again, just because I think something's good doesn't mean it's actually bringing value. And you hear a lot of the best entrepreneurs in the world just talk about bring value. And it's sometimes in your head, it may seem great, but you need to have those conversations. And you mentioned in the fire service too, there's a lot of tradition. And there's that one phrase, it's like within Harry Potter saying Voldemort, but it's like 100 years of tradition unimpeded by progress. I know it's maybe kind of a funny phrase, but in some regards it's true. How do we break that cliche or that status quo? And maybe what do you have an example of a success story of how there was a problem and technology is now an enabler and force multiplier for the fire law or DOD?
Yeah, sure. So there's a couple. I mean, I will tell you that I actually, when conferences occurred, I am very famous for speaking out against that phrase of 100 years of tradition unimpeded by progress, because I do firmly believe that it's 100 year of tradition where first responders are today making decisions that will dictate the next 100 years of the fire service or law enforcement or firefighting. But a couple areas that I think of that are really interesting are around unmanned systems and some misdirections that were created there. So for instance, I worked at Teeks for 12 and a half years, and it was very common to see a medium duty truck, a 250 or 350 truck, that would have this huge monitor on the back of it. And you would see it all the time. We do a lot that they, I'm sorry, they do a lot of industrial training at Teeks. And so finally one day, you know, no dumb questions. I said, why do these trucks all have these monitors on there? Well, that's because in industrial firefighting, it was very common to hook a hose to the back of this truck, drive as close to the fire in the refinery, and the driver would get out of the truck and run back to safety. And, you know, there's a lot of new technology that enhances our ability to no longer put people in harm's way like that. I believe it was LA Fire Department who just came out with some videos. It's very heavily being circulated right now of an unmanned system that carries a monitor and a charge line all the way up to the fire. So we actually have this technology. I know US Pumps and Ferrera had one. We actually have that technology in our portfolio and axle box, and we call it the Wolverine. And so there's an example where technology absolutely is more efficient and effective at deploying resources than what we would traditionally do by having someone go sacrifice a pickup and potentially an individual to get close to a fire. Another thing that we just did with the same piece of technology is today, when an Army group goes out to build an obstacle, so we call this the rapid obstacle marking system, there would typically be four people to build like a barbed wire fence or a concertina wire fence. And so we went in with a piece of technology and showed how that could be reduced to two people. And we actually had the ability to produce fence faster. These markings, we could actually produce it significantly faster than a four-man team. Plus, it reduced by almost 80% the actual physical labor required to move obstacle marking material or do the logistics of getting the T-post and the wire and all of that to wherever you're actually going to make the marker. So that's an example where, you know, technology is not only reducing the exposure of life, it's reducing the actual manual or physical demands of the actual warfighter in that case, but it's actually making them do their job more efficiently and actually being able to deploy product a lot faster than with their traditional ways. And so when I first read the project, I thought, this can't, I don't understand how in 2020 this can even be a project. But sure enough, September 3rd, we went to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and actually demoed this capability. And so, you know, it's taken us a long time to get some of these technologies into the market, but I really think unmanned systems going forward are going to have a significant impact on the fire service, the law enforcement service, and the military, especially as we have a combination of the difficulties of recruiting. I mean, think about law enforcement right now and all of the protest and the defunding police. It seems unlikely that that would be a high recruitment category, that a lot of people would want to go, you know, volunteer for that. But also you hear for the last decade, you hear about volunteerism rates being low, both in law enforcement or both in volunteer fire departments and military. So I think unmanned systems are going to have a huge role going forward. And that's just an area that I think hopefully answers your question.
Yeah. I mean, we could get in the weeds in terms of talking about wearables and software and really anything that's a technology's enabler. And I think that's maybe the exciting aspect too, of that there's so much technology out there that can help really become the force multipliers and enabling the fire service or law enforcement or DOD to do their job better and prevent the line of duty deaths. But it, you know, it still kind of comes down to, I think, of taking these ideas and putting them into practice, having conversations, doing the proper demos, doing the proper pilots, doing the getting everything through. And it definitely takes some perseverance and patience. I know it's a challenge, but sometimes entrepreneurs, like you said, you may talk to one department and they may love it. You may talk to someone else and say it's terrible. And so you got to have thick skin. And I know at Make Safe Tech, you're working to, you know, be a cheerleader, but also be a realist. And I know you've got some kind of a new program coming up with the pitch. So for entrepreneurs and technologists out there, let us know, tell us about what is upcoming with Make Safe Tech and what are some resources and programs that they should be aware of.
Perfect. So I like to say that we're eHarmony. You know, sometimes we have to tell you, all right, based off of your profile, it's unlikely you're going to match with that individual. And so, you know, we try to have that conversation openly with as many people as possible. But at the same time, we felt like, and I specifically felt like, with all of the COVID things that were going on, public safety innovation and what we call safe tech innovation was really being forgotten about. And so we have put together a national advisory council, which I'm really proud of at Safe Tech. And so this includes a number of organizations, including both here locally, but also with our Brazos Valley Economic Development Corporation and Galveston Economic Development Corporation. We actually have members all across the country, in DC and Atlanta and Chicago. Darley is one of our founding members on our National Advisory Council, the Western Fire Chiefs Association, Kirk McKenzie's McKenzie Technology, Skyfire. There's several members who were in agreement that there needs to be a national ecosystem around safe technology. And so I went to that National Advisory Council, and there's many more members. You can go check out all of our Safe Tech National Advisory Council members at makesafetech.org. Down at the bottom, you'll see those founding members there. But I said, guys, we have to have a virtual event. And I really don't like virtual events. I've been in a lot of them. And I said, it's limited to half a day, and I want to give away $25,000 to $35,000. And so we decided on Tuesday, November the 17th, we're going to host a virtual event called Safe Tech Pitch. And if you are a company that is developing wearable technology, unmanned technology, you've been providing and working on things for COVID-19, you're working on how a vehicle communicates with emergency personnel, warfighter technology, you've won SBIRs, you've done anything that is actually creating technology that would enhance public safety and first response and armed forces, we want to know about that technology. If you're doing gunshot detection, if you're doing obstacle detection, whatever it is that you're doing, we would love to introduce you to first responders from all over the country. We're asking the national committees from International Association of Fire Chiefs and International Association of Chiefs of Police, the National Sheriff's Association, members of the military, to participate as judges of these technologies and to get an opportunity for them to see some tech that they maybe haven't seen or possibly wouldn't even see if these companies weren't pitching in this particular platform. So we're using Socio and Zoom. It's a 5-question application. It's as simple as we can possibly make the application. We've actually extended the deadline for companies to apply to this Sunday, which I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's the 25th. So you have till midnight on the 25th to answer 5 questions and upload a 100-second video. We're going to pick the top 20 companies, and on November the 6th, we're going to ask you to make at least 1 6-minute pitch. And if you advance to the finals, then you'll make 2 6-minute pitches. And at a minimum, you know, you're going to get exposure to all of these people. On the top side, We're going to give away $25,000 to $35,000. We're aiming towards a top prize of $10,000 to one company. And so we're really excited about bringing people together in a virtual environment because the ecosystem has to continue on, even though the conferences are not. And I have not personally ever seen an event that brought law enforcement, military, firefighting, emergency medical tech all together in one particular platform. And that's really what we're focused on with SafeTech, is bringing all of those people together. And so we're planning on doing that. It's called SafeTech Pitch, November 17th, which is a Tuesday. It's in the afternoon. I believe it's from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. But it's absolutely free to register. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. So we want as many people to engage and find out about these technologies, so that we can give away some money and at the same time introduce you to the people who actually need your technology to do their job efficient, effective, and keep them all safe.
That's epic, Caleb. And just kudos to you. And I've always admired your ability to pull people together and enhance this ecosystem. And I've felt the same within COVID, where it's like, oh, you know, let's just put in a eraser on 2020. I can't wait for 2021. It's like, no, it's like, the world is changing, so we must adapt. And I think that just to kind of give some context, this was, I know this event in the past was different with Product Development Center at Teeks, but for those out there, I mean, kind of, you talked about earlier, eHarmony or Farmers Only or Hinge or Bumble, whatever you call it. You know, a great example of this was Darley participated in this, and Darley in 2018 or 2017 or 18 met Bounce Imaging, and the year after met Emily, and Darley has now become a distribution partner and commercialized both those technologies to different first responder companies around the world. That was, again, just matchmaking from technology to distribution partner and working to commercialize it. So there's no shortage, and there's a huge demand for the technology to the institution, to the distribution partner. You know, it really does take an ecosystem to take it from idea to bringing value to the market. And I'm excited to see this event unfold. So if you got entrepreneurs, Caleb is your guy to reach out to, and the applications can be found where, Caleb?
MakeSafeTech.org. As soon as you go to our main website, or you go straight to the website, it should be the very first thing that you see, and you can click actually apply or register. So everybody go to MakeSafeTech.org, and this will allow you to register for the event or to actually apply to be one of the competing technology companies.
That's awesome. Well, in the realm of you know, sake of time, and everyone's got busy lives, and while we could go on for hours, I want to kind of wrap up with a couple questions here, but One question that I'm interested in your thoughts on, and you can answer either one, or prefer to answer both, but in either order, is what's something right now that keeps you up at night and scares you, or it gives you fear or keeps you up at night? And on the flip side, what's something you're most excited about? And this could be in the realm of stuff going on within Axelbox or SafeTech, or just within the general macro context of the world.
So I'm going to answer the last one first, and that's what am I the most excited about? And the answer to that is Made in America. Darley does this because I know you guys have manufacturing facilities in a couple different states, and I really admire the fact that Darley is able to maintain some of that manufacturing capabilities in your pumps and different areas. We are seeing COVID actually create a significant opportunity for us to bring manufacturing back to the United States. And this gets me so excited because I was a kid that always loved tangible things. So my mom will tell lots of stories about my dad might have received a new lawnmower for Christmas, and by New Year's Eve, I'd have it in 1,000 parts because I was just curious, what are all the parts in a lawnmower? So I would take it completely apart. And so I've always been fascinated with touching things and feeling things and tangible, workable products. And so we are investing very heavily down here in College Station into making technology here in the United States. So we're working on advanced manufacturing technology We've just invested heavily into an injection molding facility, and I've had conversations on Friday about bringing a 50,000 square foot injection molding facility to our community. We're working on an intelligent nanofiber technology. That's actually the name of the company. We're working on bringing its manufacturing to this community. And now, I didn't realize I was going to have to do this, but now we're even looking at bringing wearable technology like our watch. So the carbon watch, we were just notified that our manufacturer overseas wasn't interested in building it for us anymore. And so that was a huge blow. But, you know, for us, it was a very fast and quick epiphany for me to think, you know, we just need to bring all of that back into the United States. So that's what I'm the most excited about. What keeps me up at night is what got me started. And into leaving Teaks, a great job with a lot of great people and training all of these people, and leaving into my own companies was really the fact that I can't sleep knowing that good technology are not being implemented. And if the technology are not being implemented because people don't know about it, I can fix that. If people are not implementing technology because of, you know, discrimination or you know, particular tradition, they don't want to adopt a technology because they've always done it some way, I can't handle that. And I have to find a way to move these technologies into the market space. And so one of the things that I'm really big on is goal setting. And so I just did a different podcast and we talked about big, hairy, audacious goals. And so my BHAG is actually to put gunshot detection in every school in this country by January 15, 2030. And so long as I have kids that are in school, this will keep me up at night until every school that I know of in this country that my kids go to school to, that your kids and other guys and girls all around the country, until our kids are going to school in a school that I feel confidently is monitoring all threats, that stuff keeps me up at night. And you can talk to a lot of people. I don't do a lot of sleeping. So I have someone who refers to what I do called second shift. So I'm usually here at this office from about 8 o'clock to six, and then I go spend time with my family, and about 8:30 or nine, I'm back on. And so I usually will run to about 2 or 3 in the morning. And then I start over. And so these are things that keep me up at night. And there is great technology in this country, and there is great technology around this world that are not being implemented to their fullest extent. And if you did that, it would enhance public safety for us and our families. It would increase safety for first responders and armed forces. And so that's what keeps me up at night.
Wow, Caleb, thank you. And we need the trailblazers like you in this industry, and we got to have those BHAGs all across. I mean, I think about it in my personal life and my family life and in my career. I mean, you got to set those goals. And even if you fall a little short, then that's okay. You got to keep working towards it. And I admire the passion that you're working on. And I know if something doesn't scare you a little bit, then maybe you should be trying something else and keep pushing that envelope, because it's okay to fail. And I think just to kind of close us out here, even though that was maybe closing questions, but talk about failure. Why is failure something that should not be something that is demonized or feared? And why is something that we must embrace failure if we want to continue to make progress within all this technology commercialization you're talking about?
Yeah. So actually, so if you guys have heard about Masterclass, I just, couldn't remember my login. So now I have 2 subscriptions to Masterclass because I took a trip yesterday and I really wanted to listen to Bob Iger, who just retired as the CEO of Disney. And he talks about, you know, being willing to take risk and being willing to fail. And one of the things that he said is you need to be optimistic that the decision is going to be successful. But at the same time, that you still have to calculate what are the potential outcomes if things do not go well. And therefore, if you make a decision, let's say it's an investment into making products in America, you can know that if things go well, that first responders and law enforcement and contracting companies will like a made in America product. If it goes poorly, Maybe the cost overruns by double, and maybe the time to part is significantly slower. But if you go into it knowing those are potentially the downsides, then when you are fronted with some of those difficulties, or you could say failure, so let's say I want parts by 60 days and you get them in 120 days, you've already have a point to measure yourself from. And if you just said, well, if I don't have parts in 60 days, this deal isn't going to work, I think that you've set yourself up for a point of failure where you have no room to learn from that. And we've learned this a lot through COVID-19. So we've stood up two full-blown manufacturing capabilities in COVID. The first one, parts were ordered in December. They were due in February. They showed up on June 22nd. The other one, we ordered parts in March. They were due in July, and we expect them to show up the first week of November. And so you have to have a bit of hard-headedness about this. But you also have to have that expectation of if things don't go well, what could those outcomes look like? And that way, when they do occur, you're not completely caught off guard, and you're not also really disappointed in yourself because you knew that those were the downsides. And as you go through the process, you can make adjustments, pivots. You can actually make some calculated changes along the way to make sure that you avoid hitting those known downfalls that could occur when you take risk. But just simply put, as now a guy who's invested in a couple of different companies, now that I'm out, I look for people who have had failure in their career. And for me, I think someone who has tasted failure or experienced failure, regardless of the definition of what that looks like, they're more determined, and they have that prior experience, which makes them less likely to want to repeat that same scenario. And so I learn best from failure. One of the things I tell my people here, and I listen a lot to Reid Hoffman with Masterclass, is he talks about the willingness to accept failure in the name of speed. And so traditionally, you might only have a tolerance rate of 10%. Well, my company's grown really fast. We're 30 employees right now. We're 13 months old. I tell my team, my tolerance level of failure is about 30%. And what I mean by that is, if, let's say I give you a marketing budget for $10,000, if $3,000 does not produce results, then I'm okay with that. Because that going really fast and trying some new things hopefully taught us something that we will not repeat on the next $10,000 investment. I'm not willing to accept losing $10,000 and not increase shares, get any additional likes, not create any website traffic. That's not acceptable. But to try some new things and be able to do it at a really high rate of speed, you have to be willing to accept some things of failure. But, you know, sharpen your blade, figure out what those things are, and take another stab at it. And when you do, I think you'll have a lot more success on the next go around.
Love it. When you were talking, it reminded me of the quote of everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. And you know, I think you almost got to be prepared to be punched in the mouth. And sometimes a good, like in sports, I'm a diehard Green Bay Packer fan, and we just got punched in the mouth yesterday by the Buccaneers. And you know what? A good punch in the face is a good wake-up call, because you can't get complacent. You need to be ready for that, and you got to stay hungry and stick to your roots and just keep pushing it hard, because if you stay complacent or just assume it's going to happen for you, then that's the ultimate recipe for long-term failure.
Right. Yeah. Get punched in the mouth.
Yeah. We'll drop the mic there. Well, Caleb, I admire your passion, your hustle, and all the work you're doing. Keep up the great work. We all are rooting for you, want to support you, and really look forward to the Safe Tech Pitch event coming up. And for all those listening, make sure to visit the makesafetech.org and reach out to Caleb on LinkedIn or email. And Caleb, good talk with you, brother.
Thanks, brother. Have a good day.
You too.